Philosophers.
Philosophers.
So, David, you know what we should talk about today?
What should we talk about today?
Stuff we shouldn't talk about.
Stuff we shouldn't talk about. Are we talking about things that we shouldn't talk about on purpose?
Yes.
Okay.
Today, we're going to talk about taboos. To start out, as we normally do, with our definitions from the Oxford, a taboo, as a noun, is a social or religious custom prohibiting or restricting a particular practice or forbidding association with a particular person, place, or thing. It does have one sub-definition, which is a practice that is prohibited or restricted by social or a religious custom. Objectively, it means the subject that is taboo inherits those same qualities, or it is a subject of similar nature. Now, and it does also, this is not really so important with what we're doing today, but it is interesting that it is also the verb. So, a taboo, or to make a subject a taboo, you taboo it, which is weird. It's kind of fun to say.
But I was about to say, I don't think I've ever heard anyone use that word as a verb.
Yep. Now, I will say for the objective, though, there is a sub-definition, which is interesting, which is stated as designated as sacred or prohibited. And I think there's going to be some interesting things we can say about that. So I think we're going to take this, let's talk about it as people so commonly do when they don't, because that's the whole point of it being a taboo. When a person normally says, well, that subject is taboo, or, you know, that's a taboo here, don't do that. I find most people might run into it commonly whenever you're traveling, because those are times when you become openly aware that a subject is taboo. Growing up in a society that has taboos, it's easy, I think, not even to be aware of them, because it's just ingrained in the culture you've been immersed. So when normally you hear that, it just, taboo also has an association with this, with something just being a bad thing. I think it's important to note that generally speaking with taboos can concern an action or an idea, and sometimes actions associated as a result of the ideas. You know, however, because the nature of taboos, they're not to be discussed, and the act is often socially, if not physically, enforced against, it's oftentimes difficult to discuss the concept of a taboo at all. Which is why I think it's important that we talk about it. What do you have to think about that, David?
I totally agree that no subject should really be off limits, because if we censor ourselves to even talk about things, then we can find ourselves being trapped by our own social customs and holding ourselves back from things that are potentially irrational. Now, I'm not saying that all taboos are taboo for irrational reasons or with no reasons, but that it is possible that we are restraining ourselves from certain behavior, which there really isn't anything wrong with, and we can't get past it, because to even bring up the argument that behavior ought to be acceptable is itself taboo.
Right. I want to examine these definitions a little closer while we're at the beginning. It's interesting to me that there is kind of a dual nature to something that is taboo. Taboos are typically associated with things that are considered generally negative, harmful, disgusting, just very negative. But they can also describe something that is considered sacred and holy. It's as though they encapsulate society and anything outside the normal strata, whether because it's too good or it's too should be set aside and well, or it's too terrible and awful. Taboo, it almost seems, is trying to define, or when you call something taboo, it's trying to define things that should be left outside the common societal realm.
I think a good example of something that is held sacred that we would call taboo, if you look at very religious cultures, then questioning the religion is taboo.
Right. Or speaking negatively of the deity or its prophets for any reason.
I.e. blasphemy.
Right. I think there are other things as well. In a non-religious sense, take a very patriotic society or maybe even a nationalistic society, speaking out against or talking about a problem that your country has in a proud society can get you, you know, looked upon and enforced on in the same way as if you'd said something, you know, normally terrible. That we would normally be considered taboo. A good example for this is in a lot of times communist societies, those who are strictly devoid from religion, so they claim, like we'll take communist Russia, speaking out against the state or saying that, you know, I think there's a serial killer on the loose was considered to be taboo. For example, there's a really good film about a detective in communist Russia where he was prevented from performing an investigation because the body politic and the bureaucrat, the member of the bureaucracy or the party who sat in on all these meetings would say, oh, communist Russia is perfect. We don't have serial killers here. So you're wrong. And he was held back in his career for even suggesting it. And acts were taken against him and his family to kind of restrict them and make them out of retribution for even mentioning that something so terrible could even happen. And it wasn't that the fact that a serial killer exists was taboo. It's not the fact that serial murder was taboo. It was that mentioning it in the context of the perfect society, in quotes there, is what was taboo. So it doesn't necessarily have to be religious, but I will say I agree that it tends to come up much more often in religion, because you find concepts of what is considered, well, even the concept of sacredness is a religious concept.
Right. I think that's really because religions are probably the foremost social forces which have such widespread influence, but also concern themselves with concepts like modesty.
Right.
Another example, by the way, of political taboo in the United States, for instance, might be refusing to stand for or recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
Mm, true. We can look at the whole NFL kneeling incident of late as a good example of that. Moving on, I'd like to move on to something else that this is kind of leading towards. The trait or characteristic of something as a taboo, would you say that it is socially inferred, or is it an inherent trait of an object?
Run that by me once more.
Does the taboo nature of a subject or an activity, is it inherent to the subject or activity, or is it conferred upon that subject or activity by society?
It is. Taboo is definitely a social construct.
Right. While the definition obviously really hints at that, it's important to note, because as soon as you begin discussing taboos, I find, people act as though that's not the case. But if you just state a taboo as being something that's socially enforced and a social construct, people will generally agree in the abstract. But when you start picking down to things that make people really uncomfortable, it gets difficult, I feel. So, what are some good examples of taboo in the United States or Western culture, would you say, in the modern era?
behaviors or ideas?
Let's start with ideas first and then behaviors, because generally speaking, the idea precedes the behavior.
Okay. The of course, most immediate subject I can think of is slavery. Basically, anyone who has who's lived for a long enough amount of time in the United States and has absorbed the culture is very apprehensive on the subject of slavery.
Mm-hmm. I would say the concept of race is not so much a taboo as it once was, perhaps, but it is a considered a taboo subject. For me, I would say any subject, for me, what I would begin defining as taboo subjects are things that when you are in, say, a workplace, it's inappropriate to discuss with a coworker with whom you're familiar for fear of being overheard. Because people, I mean, taboos as ideas generally don't exist between people, in my opinion, that are close to one another. A good example I'd like to cite is generally you can see really close groups of friends say taboo words and call their friends taboo things, which have an entirely different context. The context has a lot to do with what makes it a taboo as well, I think, but context is also socially constructed in this realm, okay? It's not, and we're not talking the physical realm, we're talking about the social realm. It, you know, of course, the social realm is a social construct, but.
So on that note, one other thing, this might warrant its own episode, actually, but So I'll lead into it with the taboo of considering seriously that there might be immutable differences between the races, right?
Right.
And of course, there is somewhat of a good reason for this to be taboo, because overt racists have often used this as a justification for their further conclusions on it, which, you know, are not exactly rational, but because people historically have come to these conclusions based on these considerations, the subject has basically become taboo. And if you consider that question, then you run a high risk of being immediately labeled a racist.
Right. Just for bringing up the subject.
Sam Harris found himself in hot water over this for talking with someone whose name I can't remember, who was basically doing some scientific research on this. I forget exactly what it was that they were looking at, but drew a racial distinction in their conclusions. And Sam Harris, by merely speaking with this individual, was labeled a racist by quite a number of people. And so then the other topic, which I think may warrant its own episode, becomes: is certain information best left unknown? Because, you know, for instance, suppose we discovered objectively that that people of one race were, let's say, mentally superior to another, you know, and suppose we discovered that, the societal reaction to that, would it be so negative as for it to have been better for us to have never found that out? Is it a bad idea for us to try to gain that information?
Well, I will...
Because there obviously is an answer.
Right. Well, I think that you can look at how that question has been answered throughout history. I mean, when religious organizations, for instance, were the dominant political power, or much more directly dominant political powers, and I'm kind of leaning back towards like medieval Europe, there were things that were believed too corrupting to be allowed discussed in society. So, and I think there are plenty of things, like Machiavelli even suggests there are concepts that you must make taboo. He didn't say it like that, but you need to quell these ideas because they're dangerous in society. And while I would not dispute the claim that ideas can be dangerous for a society as a whole, just by the inherent nature of the idea itself, I will say that throughout most of human history, I can't prove, but I would tend to believe that the concept has been, or the idea about it has been, we really should keep certain ideas from the minds of the public through social enforcement. Now, I do not believe this is the correct thing to do. Firstly, because I do not believe anyone else has, no one should have the right to tell a person what they can't think about. Thought policing, I generally think, is wrong. And that's what taboos really are. The nature of enforcing a taboo is thought policing in a very soft sense.
You also run the risk of falling into profound elitism when you start entertaining the idea that, you know, maybe you can handle knowing certain information, but those people, the commoners, can't handle it.
Right. And that's, you know, laying down your own judgment against others. And not only that, but it's one thing to not share something with someone else, but it's another thing entirely, because, for instance, most taboo subjects, while it is taboo to share them, they get shared anyway. And it's not so much the activity of sharing it that gets the most heinously punished. It's oftentimes any expression is punished equally of it, you know. And I think that's interesting. Now, I would ponder to, and I think another nature of the taboos that makes it interesting is, what idea is too dangerous for society? Could we get an example? Well, by the very nature of why it should be taboo, no, you cannot. If a person really did believe they had an idea that was really dangerous to be known to the public, they would consider it a duty to themselves to restrict sharing the information. So in order to engage in a conversation with that person, you know, they would be unwilling from the get-go to share the idea with you for fear of it being spread, you know. In a lot of ways, it's almost like how nuclear weapons could be treated, you know. We have, you know, certain places have them, but we definitely know that other places shouldn't have them. So, I can't tell you how this is made, but I have one. And the only way to prove it is to either explain how it works or demonstrate it. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And the consequences might be too high for me to even show you either. I do not think that should inherently be an obstacle, though, but I do think that that's very thought-provoking, you know. Could, you know, people individually come up with ideas so heinous that they can't be uttered? Or in the case of certain religions, something so good that it shouldn't even be muttered out of respect.
I don't know if your hypothesis there is entirely correct.
Okay.
And now, this is a little bit subjective. Actually,
sure.
It's highly subjective. But let's take, for instance, communism as an idea.
Yep.
This is considered by a lot of people to be a very dangerous idea. And one that a lot of people, if they came up with it, if they considered the idea in isolation and it had never been brought up before, they might say, wow, that's really dangerous. I can't tell this to anyone. But obviously, someone came up with it and thought it was a good idea and shared it with everyone. And so can you really say that no such ideas can be identified because the people who came up with them would see it as so dangerous they would never share it? Because we enter into the realm of opinion. Who thinks what is dangerous?
Well, I think while that is in the realm of opinion, you can draw realistic statistics from it. You can count the number of people who have died under a communist regime.
Right.
Compared
so
to the spread.
What I'm so you're we're missing the point here slightly.
Okay.
What I'm talking about like imagine communism had never been implemented ever.
Okay.
And in fact, no one has ever brought it up before.
Right.
Okay. So somebody in isolation considers this idea in his private time and decides that's dangerous. I won't share it with anyone. Meanwhile, somebody else thinks of it and says, this seems like a good idea. I need to write a book about this and share it with everyone.
Right. Well,
I guess that's what I'm getting at. Is that?
But the difference is we label the person who came up with the idea as terrible. Like, most people that laud the idea of communism as being awful often still hold negative, they can't separate the art from the artist in this case.
I agree, but I still think this is sort of missing the point, because your hypothesis earlier was that we can identify no such ideas because they would all have been withheld by who discovered them or came up with them. At least that's what I got out of what you were saying.
Oh, no. Let me clarify. Well, that is technically what I have said. I said it would be difficult. It is more difficult because of the nature of taboos to even experiment with these ideas, with the idea of whether or not there exists an idea that is too dangerous. That's what I was getting at. I'm not saying it's impossible, but what I'm saying is it's more difficult. It's complicated, I feel. I'm trying to work through it a little bit in my head. But really what I'm saying, though, is... Here's another good example. We do not tell certain people societally about certain things. You know, there are, like, one example that may or may not be positive is children. For example, we generally don't go into graphic detail about things of sexual natures, which is also sex also being a taboo, or like things that are graphic in detail and macabre, like murder in its gruesome details, which can also be considered somewhat taboo because of the taboo associated with death.
Yeah, it's one thing to say, you know, so-and-so killed so-and-so. You know, we don't go into any details about that. As soon as you start explaining the gory details of exactly how the murder occurred, it immediately becomes taboo.
Right. Well, and not only that, but, like, a lot of things were to be considered taboo for children. And so
especially so for children.
Right. Now, we mention children, weirdly, a lot on this show, I've noticed, when we do examples or anecdotes. And it's funny because they are actually a really unique case in a lot of times. But I think in our daily lives, there are subjects that we intentionally withhold from adults. For example, we almost entirely try to withhold ideas for how to escape from prison from people who are in prison. Like, I doubt there are any books in a prison library on how to fashion a shiv, or the 50 most effective ways to fashion a shiv, or the 10 most effective ways to break out of handcuffs. You know, those aren't necessarily taboo subjects, but in the context of a prison, it might be, you know.
Or even if you're not in prison, it immediately raises suspicion about why exactly you want to learn about these things.
And I think the best example of this is the Anarchist Cookbook.
Yep.
Talk about a item that is taboo, and at one point was illegal to even own, which is the social will of the people being exercised through force, just because something is deemed too terrible. And for those of you who do not know what the Anarchist Cookbook is, I will link it below because I can't get in trouble anymore for sharing it. But in a nutshell, it was it's a book. I forget the author. I will credit him below. He or her, I don't know. That explains to the anarchist that would be having this book how to do all sorts of things to effectively defy their government. Everything from how to create explosive devices from everyday things to how to cultivate and prepare and process illegal drugs for sale or for personal use, to even ways to intercept police radio signals, and that information is considered confidential. It was all published, self-published, mind you. I don't think any publishing company necessarily picked this up. I can't remember the history on it, but this book was, you know, declared to be too dangerous for the average person to have, or for it to be unrestricted, or its access to be unrestricted. And I think another good example, if I published a book today on how to effectively hijack airplanes in the post 9/11 era, I don't think many people would be very happy that I made that book. You know, you would hear people saying, why would you give them that idea? You know, why are you doing that? You're responsible for giving them the idea, you know, or stuff like that. But Is that true, though? Is it too dangerous? And one other last example is, and you see this a lot in the world of computer science, is ideas about circumventing security measures. Code is just an expression of human ideas. It's to make a machine do something. If I have one way of idea of how to exploit the machine, there's a constant game of cat and mouse going on between those who are considered black hat hackers who are trying to hack for malicious reasons and break into things to do harm, and white hat hackers who are trying to do, you know, protect these things and cover these exploitations.
They're doing the exact same things but with different motivations. And I was just about to bring up that's an interesting disparity between the physical world and the, you know, so-called cyber world. Mm-hmm. That in computer security, it is highly valued that people publish exploits that they discover so that this becomes motivation for the developer to plug the hole. But if you were to, say, publish a book on how to hijack airplanes, this would be seen as informing terrorists and not giving, you know, notice to airlines and saying, you know, here are your security holes, you need to plug them.
Right. That's a weird disparity. But I think that also may be a good example of why taboos are a bad thing. One possible reason. At least for the concept of there being an idea too terrible that we can't let people know about it. The intellectual elitism aside, we find ourselves, and we do this because we believe that discussing ideas is the best way to lead us towards a truth. Well, taboo subjects, by their very nature, do not even want to be discussed. And while I do not think that the motivation for some is to conceal truth on purpose, I do think perhaps that is a latent effect. For example, the truth about, logical truths about certain events and methods of ruling, for example, like Machiavelli's book, The Prince. I mentioned it again. I need to link that as well. For the longest time was held as a, don't let the commoners get their hands on this book. Not like it matters, though, because we've prevented them from learning how to read. Not literally, but effectively, they can't read anyway. But it talks about why people do things that they do. And there's a good modern-day corollary to that book. It's not listed as such, but it sort of is. And that's the Rules for Rulers book. These books highlight a lot of, and discuss a lot of truths, I think, or concepts that could be truths, about how human beings organize themselves and power dynamics. Knowing these things puts you at an advantage when you're in a system like that. Just like being a psychologist in a poker game might be advantageous for you, you know. Knowledge is power in that way. So I do think there's also motivations for people individually or for systems of people to stray dangerously close to postmodernistic terms and to maintain systems. And that's a complaint I hear often from postmodernists is, you know, this shouldn't be taboo because by being taboo, it's being used to reinforce a social system or a system of oppression, as they say so often. While I may not agree with their entire assessment, I do think that certain social systems build taboos in for protection, or they may not have built them in, but by consequence of their existence, it protects the social institution as well. You know, religions see this a lot. It's kind of hard for people to find flaws in a religion if discussing them is blasphemous, you know, and things of that nature. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I totally agree. There's lots of places, you know, obviously I'm very familiar with Christianity. There's lots of places in the Bible where it will cover its tracks by making certain methods of investigation taboo. The most ready example I can think of is when Jesus quotes some proverb or commandment to never put God to the test. I think that was when Satan was supposed to be tempting him in the desert or something like that. Anyway, that's not really important.
Sure. Now that we've discussed, or, you know, to discuss the concept of there being ideas that are too bad to be known by everybody, could you think of good results from taboo? Do you think that taboo may have a use in society that is positive? On a principled level and a pragmatic level, and you can take them each in turn.
I guess it depends on why the thing is taboo.
Okay.
Because basically I think we've defined a taboo as some sort of prohibited behavior, item, or idea.
Right.
I don't think that ideas should be taboo, and I can't really think of why they should be, besides, you know, what I already brought up, raised the question of whether any information could ever be best left undiscovered. Cases might could be made in that realm. But, let's say a prohibited behavior. Okay, let's take something that's very universally prohibited, murder. Okay, by our definition, murder is taboo, and we would all agree that it should stay that way.
Right.
To the point where we not only socially condemn murderers, we exact punishments on them. For reasons we discussed last week about trying to reduce the number of murders in our societies. So we would need to come up with, if we wanted to question the legitimacy of taboo behaviors, we would need to more specifically define taboo to not include these things which are universally accepted.
Right. I also think, since we're transitioning to acts that are considered taboo, I often hear the case made, and it's not made this way, but yeah, it's pretty close, it's implied, that taboo thoughts and taboo ideas lead to taboo behaviors. I would be curious, and I don't honestly know if there have been any studies done, and that would be something I'd be interested in seeing, is that true? Or can you create an experiment that can quantify that? So, not like it matters, because
I guess it depends on like the nature of the taboo thought, because, you know, like considering the concept of murder,
right?
In most people, you know, people who are not psychopaths, does not give them the urge to murder people.
Right, but does. Okay, well, let's take a more mild one.
Okay.
Me dancing on my enemy's grave is considered taboo. You know, mistreating the dead is considered taboo. Not burying a body is considered taboo. There's a lot of taboos around death in general, and murder, I think, extends from the fact that it is making death. I would be curious to know if me expulsing the idea that, you know, that's a good way to behave is, you know, I had the idea to dance on a person's grave. People disagreed with it, but they were openly discussing it and the merits of it. Would it increase the likelihood of other people doing it, I guess, is my question that I would want to be answered by the study. You know, and now that I've said it out loud, it's kind of ridiculous, because what does it matter? That didn't hurt anybody.
I was about to say, if we discuss the idea of dancing on the graves of one's enemies and we decide that it's okay, then yes, probably more people will do it. But if we've decided that it's okay, no foul.
And it no longer is a taboo. So that may have been a begging the question type argument inadvertently, because I really didn't know. What about, so in principle, no ideas should be taboo for you?
Right.
Okay.
Right, because I'm not only not an elitist, I'm so anti-elitist that the thought of taboo ideas sort of disgusts me a little bit. Because
is it taboo to you?
It's taboo to place taboos on ideas a little bit. That's an interesting contradiction.
Yeah. Just think about that one for a little bit.
I'm taking a moment to think about this. Well, okay. So it disgusts me, but I wouldn't put a prohibition on being an elitist.
Right. But I
would actively discourage elitism, which I guess is a form of social prohibition.
Well, but taboos are socially constructed. Now, they may express themselves in things like laws. Do you think it might be possible that taboos
at this point, though, I feel like now we're rapidly, we have such a loose definition of taboo at this point that we're rapidly approaching a point where trying to convince someone to change their behavior is asserting a taboo.
Well, let's go back to the definition of it. It's a social or religious custom prohibiting or restricting a particular practice or forbidding the association with a particular person, place, or thing.
Okay, so me being personally anti-elitist and trying to convince people that their elitism is, I'll simplify and say, unfair, it's not a social custom. That's a personal opinion. And so therefore it's not a taboo by this definition.
Right, but what I was going with is, don't individual preferences and individual gripes lead to social gripes?
Yes, because a social custom is just majority opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And this again might be assuming a bit much, but if you had a more convincing argument, like say you had the convincing argument that there should not be any taboo ideas, period, and you win the majority of people over to the idea that there should be no ideas.
I guess then to me it depends on why I'm making that assertion. If I'm merely making the assertion and I say no ideas should be taboo, then I'm basically making an anti-dogma dogma, which is a contradiction.
Right.
However, if I can come up with reasons for why there should be no taboos, and I can say, look, you know, taboos cause X, Y, and Z social effects that we don't want. So therefore, if we don't want these ill effects, we should not hold taboos. Then it's not really a taboo, but really a justified argument.
Okay. What about the concept of me saying, sex should be taboo because talking about sex has effects A, B, and C on society, and I can prove those. Because there is nowhere in the definition of a taboo does it say that it is only enforced by custom. It can have valid reasons, you know, whether or not
this is true. For instance, you know, murder and other,
right,
you know, rape, things like this that are taboo and arguably for good reason.
Right. Like taboos can have good reason. Whether or not a taboo has a good reason or not is irrelevant. A taboo is merely an observation of the fact of taboos, in my opinion, based on the definition, are only observed because of social activity towards an idea. The only way you can really test whether something is a taboo or not in a certain society is to just you dangle it in front of them. You have to say it and then watch how they react. You can't know in advance whether or not it's going to be a taboo or not.
This is true. Okay, so let's get back where we came from for a second.
Sure.
We were talking about taboo ideas. Whether you asked me whether any ideas should be taboo, right? Or did you ask me whether there should be any taboos at all?
Yes.
Because I think we already established that there are good reasons for there to be taboos on certain behaviors.
Right.
As far as ideas, I personally hold that nothing is sacred, and so therefore all ideas are on the table to be discussed. And I suppose that would then include the subject of whether there should be taboos. So in my hypothetical society in which we don't hold taboos, it would not be taboo for someone to make the suggestion that there should be a taboo.
Right.
It's just that they would be disagreed with largely in this hypothetical society.
Right. But my question is, coming from that, we had already said that the only way to find out whether or not something is taboo when it's unknown to you is to exclaim it and wait for the results, right? How do you destroy a taboo? Like, how do you fizzle it out? And because
I think we can sort of observe this right now. Look at homosexuality. That's been a taboo across many cultures for much of human history. Most, I would argue, of human history, homosexuality has been taboo in most cultures. Not all of them, but most of them. And now we see here in the West Western cultures were some of the cultures that had the most severe taboo placed on homosexuality. And now we see people who are openly homosexual and are, you know, there exist people who persecute them for this, of course, but it is not mainstream in our society to persecute these people for their sexuality. And so we have demonstration, an example of a taboo that is being undone.
Right, I agree. But I was kind of hitting on the head of taboo in general. Taboo is a taboo. Would you agree? The concept of a taboo is a taboo. It's self-defining. Would you agree?
Explain.
Okay. Discussing the concept of a taboo is taboo. An activity done being taboo. For example, would you think it would be taboo if I were to walk up to a complete stranger and say, do you want to talk about some social taboos?
No, actually.
Really?
Now, okay, I can imagine certain contexts in which if you did this, people would give you funny looks and walk away and not want to talk about this. But I can think of other contexts in which somebody might casually agree to talk about taboo subjects.
Right. Now, how can I talk about taboo subjects without alluding to or bringing up taboo subjects?
Do you mean specific subjects?
Okay. Can I talk, let's picture in your head or come up with a taboo subject. Let me know when you got one.
Okay, I have one.
Okay. How can I explain that? How can I talk about that subject without putting that subject in the head of another person?
Oh, you can't.
Exactly. And by very nature, I have spread the taboo and violated the rules by sharing it with the individual. Because you can't talk about it unless you talk about it. You know what I'm saying?
You are correct. I guess what happens here is that you're taking taboos as an absolute when they're not. If taboos were an absolute, and what I mean by this is that if because of the fact that by raising the question about a taboo, you put it in someone else's head and therefore violate the taboo, that this immediately becomes the end of the discussion, which is obviously not the case. Otherwise, taboos could never be undone.
Right. But the point I'm trying to make, though, is what I'm trying to make the case for is arguing against the existence of taboos as on ideas, which technically the definition doesn't mention ideas. It only says people, places, and things, things is one of my least favorite words in the English language because hello ambiguity. But if we could break the concept of taboo from being taboo, right? could we eliminate everything that is a taboo at once? And the reason I'm bringing that up is, and I'm postulating, is because the thought experiment we just went through, if I enter into a discussion talking about the concept of a taboo first, and can get the person to, that I'm my interlocutor, to relinquish taboos as being a positive thing, or discuss it with them, and if they reach that conclusion, you know, I can't really convince them, but I lay out some arguments and they reach that conclusion, every subject is now on the table. There is no subject too taboo to discuss because we have both arrived at a premise and place where it still might be uncomfortable because you can't undo years of social training to just all of a sudden be okay with certain things that you normally would cringe at or, you know, maybe back away from mentally. But you've sucked yourself into being able to talk about those things, right? I don't know. That was the interest. That was the thought I was going for, because while I agree that, for instance, the concept of social homosexuality is becoming less and less of a taboo. Let's say that, because there are some areas where it will still be a taboo in the West, but most of the time, you can talk about it on the news. Now, you can witness it in popular culture media.
Right, I was going to say, right. So, culture at large does not discourage it.
Right, and that's what really makes it a taboo on the cultural scale. Now, one of the other slippery things about a taboo is taboos are incredibly scope dependent, and they can...
I was going to say, let's take, for example, the United States... In the United States as a whole, homosexuality is not a taboo. In the Deep South, it very much is.
Right.
Depending on which part of the Deep South. Maybe if you're close to a big city, probably not. But if you're out...
In the rural South.
Right, in the rural
South. Generally speaking, it's a taboo. But not as much as a taboo as though you were speaking about it in perhaps a Deep South church. You know, there are varying degrees of the response that will be issued for bringing up the taboo subject. Just bringing it up, not even advocating for it. People get uncomfortable just talking about it. So I think that's what's really interesting. But one thing I think that can cross all of the strata is being able to talk about just the concept of taboos in general. You know, one other shortcoming of taboos, especially on ideas, is they uphold, generally speaking, science a lot of the time. And that's one thing that doesn't get discussed a lot because it's a taboo. One of the world's biggest problems right now is how to deal with poop. Human poop. No one likes talking about it, but it's true. You know, no one likes talking about how few human beings have access to a toilet in the current year, you know, or whatever. And scientists don't study it. And they don't study it because they can't get funding for it. Because the agencies who fund these things they raise their money oftentimes from masses of people who exercise their social, you know, authority, I guess, in that fundraising scheme. So, now don't get me wrong, there are much greater problems in science, but I think, since we mention science quite frequently, I don't think there should be any subject too taboo for science. I don't think there should be any subject of discussion that should be taboo, but specifically not for science. I'm moving the argument down from the general to a scope. In the scientific community, there should be nothing that can't be discussed, because where that begins is where science ends, eventually. So we've talked about scope a little bit when it comes to taboos, right? We talked about them on a national scale, on a regional scale, and then on a very local scale. Can taboos exist personally on an individual scale?
By the definition we laid out, no, but there's an easy analogy. Things that offend people.
Right.
These could be characterized as personal taboos.
Right. Now, for me, what's interesting is, I think what offends people or what offends a lot of people could eventually become a taboo on a societal level.
Right. Well, yeah, if something offends a lot of people, that's what makes it a taboo.
Right. And we've stated that on the social level, there should not be any taboos. What I think makes this difficult is that the only real way you can diffuse taboos is by enough individuals diffusing taboos and not being offended by it. Or not so offended that they can't even speak to someone about it. I think that's interesting. You can't mandate taboos. You can only enforce them socially because they're social constructs. And I think that's an interesting consequence of anything that's a social construct is the only reason it exists is because enough people agree that it does. Language is like that, you know.
Well, I guess it depends on what you mean by language. Because language is an objective thing insofar
well,
as it
language
is.
Language is. Like, words, vocabulary. Let me be more specific. Which is appropriate... Which of the following is appropriate to address a woman who is unmarried? Ms., Mrs., or Mrs.?
Right.
You know, we may not care, but there are some who use those words, and the reason we have to learn about them is because they're socially, you know, it's a part of the social realm we live in. And the reason they're, any definition in the dictionary isn't objective, it's the common agreed upon thing that we're talking about. And don't get me wrong, sometimes people will go to the dictionary and then just apply, copy-paste its term. There's a self-propagation effect going on in societies. Societies tend to like to propagate themselves, at least successful societies do, because anything that can't propagate itself doesn't become popular enough in the first place to become a part of society. So it's strange to see things that become a part of society that don't hold
up.
Well,
this is the whole study of memetics.
Right. Very nice. But you're right. So, but back to what we're... I'm going to draw the corollary here. What does that mean for people who... Well, how do you do that? How do you address to an individual that what makes them offended is bad for society, you know, and is the reason taboos exist? How do you draw that line? Or can you draw that line? You know?
I think, well... Like most things, it comes down to the individual. Different people will be convinced by different things. I think that if you want a general approach, you know, if we're looking for a tactic that I would choose would be straight epistemology.
Right.
Question people about what offends them. Why does this offend you?
Right. But if it comes down to individuals, even though we may think it's a bad idea, for taboos to exist. So long as the overwhelming majority of people disagree, they will continue to exist, and there's nothing we can do about it. Well, there's no guarantee we can succeed, you know. And I think this really does highlight why a street epistemology is important, but why ideas are important like this is you can't convince another person. You can only provide them with enough data to help them convince themselves. You know, that's really what happens in effective debates, is I provide information you did not know, and then you digest that information, and if you're honest, if you honestly acknowledge the data for what the way I see it, or if it's objective data, then it will change your, you will change your mind because now you have a more complete data set. And in a debate, it's not one-sided like that. Generally speaking, it's we're going to put new ideas and more information on the table for both of us to consider. And then if we continue to arrive at differing conclusions, you keep debating until you arrive at similar conclusions. Not because you're tired, not because you don't want to keep going, but because both of you look at the data and arrive at a similar conclusion based on a similar train of logic that is unique to each of you, though. I don't know. I think we might be going a little too far off into this, but to me, it's interesting because taboos are weird, and I think taboos are one of the best examples for why it's important, but no one really thinks about it because, well, we don't often discuss taboos. So I think I'm going to go talk about some taboos this week with people, make them uncomfortable. Not for the you know, enjoyment of making them uncomfortable. But I do think it's enjoy. That's another thing too. It's weird. People enjoy talking about taboos when you really get them down to it. I think that's interesting.
Well, yeah. Well, it's because people have a fascination with things that are prohibited. You know, and you can. There's the cliche. If you tell a child not to do something, that's exactly what they want to do. It's the only thing they want to do, and it's what they want to do most. You know, so this is clearly built into our psychology,
right?
That we want to talk about and do things that are prohibited, purely because they are prohibited. So yes, of course, people really like talking about taboos because the fact that they're taboos makes them interesting.
Yeah. Or is it because they're interesting, they become taboos? Does one infer the other, or is it consequential?
I think speaking from experience, I would say that it is the existence of the taboo that makes something interesting.
I definitely agree. I think anyone who's ever maybe been to a public high school knows. Good example is when I was growing up, people thought it was really cool to give themselves burn tattoos with dry ice because it's cool, literally. And it didn't become popular until the principal sent out a bulletin saying, don't do this, it's bad, and then you see them everywhere. And don't get me wrong, it might just be the defiant nature of human beings as well that kind of contributed to that, but it was hilarious, you know. And some people would, I think, use that as an example on why, you know, we shouldn't talk about bad things that happen. Because if you don't talk about it, it fades away from people's minds and it's not used as mental fuel for more bad things. But I don't know. I think it would definitely be interesting to see the science done on it. So if there are any...
I was going to say, I'm certain that there are publications about this, scientific publications.
Right. I would want to know. And I would want to know what they concluded, you know, as well. But see how deep the field is.
What I'd really like to get the bottom of personally is I'd like to get like an evolutionary psychologist in on this and figure out what the biological advantage of defying prohibitions is.
That would be...
Because it's very... I personally, and I think anyone who understands evolutionary psychology at a base level can pretty quickly come up with a hypothesis as to why prohibitions make sense.
Well, may I bring one up, perhaps, as someone who's less versed in evolutionary biology as you? One of the hypotheses I would have is taboos, specifically on ideas or activities. We'll call them prohibitions, but we're talking about taboos here. They're a great way to communicate things that are dangerous without having to explain why, because explaining why is hard. If human beings, if bears weren't scary enough, because they can be kind of cute, you know, I don't know you, but there's plenty of Russian bear memes out there that are like adorable and make me want to have a pet bear, right? That's a horrible idea, TBH, but, you know, 10,000, 50,000 years ago or whatever, you see a bear, I'm not convinced that a human being that had never seen a bear before would be immediately frightened of it. Maybe just a little bit by its size, but you see it, it's furry, it's mammalian, it's kind of like a really big dog, but no tail. It's weird. And you may not be immediately afraid of it. But if you live in a society where they talk about that is familiar with bears, one of the quickest ways to make people turn and run from it, even at the sight or mention, is just talking it up as some type of monster that is bad and you don't say its name, you know, or it will come here and eat you, and it keeps kids from being curious about it, you know.
We're this way about a few things, and in fact, it actually creates some irrational fears as well. For instance, sharks. You know, sharks are not nearly as dangerous as they're portrayed in. I'm not going to say documentaries, because a real documentary would be honest about this kind of thing.
Just say Jaws, because that's what...
Sure, Jaws, or you know, there's lots of, you know, like Discovery Channel-esque...
Shark Week is terrible about that.
Right, exactly. It's like, look how dangerous the shark. And then we see the video of the guy in the shark cage, and all these great whites are swimming around. We're like, oh my God, he's in great danger. Probably not, though.
Right. Well, it's really funny because they will pepper in the, you know, more people are killed by cows every year than sharks. But those are during like the commercial segments where it's not as heavy, where the music gets turned up and everyone's really watching for us, people out there swimming with these huge beasts, or, you know, when they're describing a shark like this, the megalodon shark could swallow 2 buses whole. And you're like, that sounds terribly dangerous. Like, they use terminology that makes it sound awfully scary because they're trying to get people to watch. And because people are enthralled by the macabre and things they're scared of, you know.
Yep.
It's a great way to live vicariously and to... there's another interesting thing. Tabooed behaviors that lead to irrational fears. Can irrational fears be useful for preparing a brain for rational fears? For example, one of the reasons it's hypothesized that we like looking at scary things, some of us, and like experiencing scary experiences, like going to a scary movie, is because it allows our brain to run through a scenario and be in a similar enough state of fear that it can kind of like beta test its reactions and then come out of the state of fear being safe and be like, okay. And so you test that, and then eventually when you're in a scary state, your brain is more capable of reacting quickly. That's hypothesized. I know not of the science of it.
I really can't appreciate that because I'm actually a person who doesn't enjoy that kind of thing. I can't stand horror films or things like that.
Really?
Yeah, I know. And I get weird looks for saying that sometimes, but I don't like roller coasters. And I'm not... I have a weird relationship with roller coasters, actually, because I've been on a few of them. And I hate the idea of being on one, and then I get on one, and I hate being on it, and then I get off, and I'm like, well, that wasn't so bad.
Right, but that's your brain rewarding you for doing something dangerous
exactly.
And surviving.
But a lot of the people I know are the opposite about that. They maybe they're scared the first time, but they do it, they feel the thrill of it to them, and then they want to do it again. I don't want to do it again, ever.
But I'm talking,
you know, I mean, there are things I would rather be on a roller coaster than be in some other situations, but
sure,
you know, it's
sure.
not like the worst thing in the world to me, but no, I don't find frightening experiences something to be sought after for fulfillment or
entertainment,
something like
this. Yeah.
They're not entertaining to me.
Right. But I'm still curious about it from a evolutionary biology, or maybe that might be anthropological. I don't know. No, that'd be definitely evolutionary biology, or maybe neuroscience. I don't know. But it's undeniable that a lot of people do enjoy macabre. You know, want to see a dead body? Like, you know, people respond to that. Circuses would not have been so popular if not. Because most people think of circuses as a cool way to see cute animals. No, circuses were freaking terrifying, man. Are you kidding me? Absolutely scary. And it's a place that's dangerous, you know. You have people throwing knives, for God's sake, at other people, but not killing them. And magicians, you know, sawing people in half, but not actually doing it. And if you go back even further, when they were hardcore, you could just go to a live vivisection for fun, like where they actually cut apart a dead body just to see what was in there. You know, people that weren't doctors just showed up and wanted to watch. And not just a few people, you know. It was pretty common that people were interested in this stuff. And so I want to know if there's a good... We do it, but is there a good reason? What might be that reason? I hypothesize that it might be a good way for our brains to slake their curiosity with the conscious knowledge that they're safe. Like, it's your conscious brain fooling your subconscious into danger settings because it just wants to see what it's going to do, you know? Will I fight or will I run? Let's find out. And that's what I think, anyway.
That's why we're willing to try all kinds of dangerous things, you know. I think we've mentioned this before, but some of the things that are the most highly praised in our culture, like human achievements.
That are dangerous.
Yeah. That are really going into space is about the stupidest thing you could do from a safety perspective.
But name one person more badass than an astronaut.
Right.
Yeah, at me.
find me somebody who doesn't want to go to space.
Oh, I could find you people. They're usually pretty smart, too. But the thing is, it's...
I guess, we'll write. But I mean, most people at least want the experience of going to space.
Right.
You know.
They think it's cool. And astronauts are held in really high regard for it. I mean, have you ever went high? Oh, man. But back on the subject of taboos, for example, I think that they are good for that. Taboos are just a way to communicate, or more than anything else, just a way to communicate, I think, originally danger and caution. And as we've become more rational creatures, that's a byproduct of our more or our less rationally capable selves, I think. Just like our fear of things like certain animals, you know, and even animals that don't exist anymore. But I can describe something to you that might be scary just based on its features, and you just get scared. Like human fears of snakes and spiders, for instance. I think it's funny how people say, oh, I have an arachnophobia. And I'm like, no, a phobia is an irrational fear of something. That is a perfectly rational fear to be afraid of spiders.
Okay. Tangent, though, it's the case could be made that it's an irrational fear. I guess it depends on what part of the world you're in, because, you know, here in North America, most spiders are not dangerous to humans.
Right.
But, you know, that said, if I find a spider in my home, I have the immediate impulse to destroy it outright. Yeah. not just kill it, destroy it. Kill it with fire.
Kill with fire, yeah.
Right. You know. But in all likelihood, it poses no threat to me at all.
Right.
But that doesn't matter. And so in that way, it's an irrational fear, because I am fearing to the point of wanting to destroy, to kill something that is threatening me in no way.
Right. It's the action. It's the extreme reaction that makes it irrational. So more or less, it's not the fact that you are afraid of something you shouldn't be afraid of. It's you react in such a way that you shouldn't react to hardly anything, you know?
Right. Well, I guess the thing that sort of makes it rational, I guess, is that it is really my ignorance, right? That I see something, it looks like a spider, okay. I don't know if that spider poses a threat to me, and I'm not about to risk it.
Right. Well, what I'm saying by rational fear is, oh, maybe this is irrational. If I knew that one in every 100 spiders was venomous, like some of the most venomous spiders in the world were, 99 other spiders, you're all going up in flames. Like, it's just not worth the risk, you know?
Right. I guess that's the same place that I was going, is that it because we're leaving it up to chance at this point, because we're ignorant, we can't look, you know, you and I can't look at a spider, identify what it is, and tell if it's venomous.
Right.
At least, you know, for most of them. Obviously, there are some giveaways for the venomous spiders. But, you know, the point is that our psychology tells us to think about the worst case scenario possible, as we've discussed before.
Right. And I think, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Sure. Right. So we think about the worst case scenario possible. We say, well, the worst case is that thing is the deadliest spider on the face of the earth, and it needs to die right now before I do.
Yeah, but why does it need to go up in flames? Like, why do you hate it? But no, I think, you know, I'm tying it back one last time, because I think we've about beat it to death. Taboos are like that. I think it's definitely, it serves a social purpose, and especially in a time when rationality didn't have to be the basis for our decision-making processes, and we didn't have time, because survival wasn't a luxury.
Exactly, right. We survival is taken for granted now.
Oh, yeah.
And it's you know, well, I mean, I'm sure psychologically it was probably the same, you know, way back when, but, you know, death is the worst thing imaginable. And it's a tragedy every time somebody dies in our society, because it is so abnormal. Right. And so, you know, back when death was a whole lot more common, and all you really had time to think about was how you're going to not die today, you don't have time to sit and rationalize things.
Right. Well, and a good example, you know, my wife and I got into it one time because I forget what we were doing. Long story short, I think she was driving, and I said, you know, stop. And she said, why? And I was like,
this is not the time to ask why.
Are you kidding me? Right. It may not have been my wife. I can't remember. It may have been one of my sisters. Long story short, I was in the car with someone else, and I said, please stop. And they said, why? You know, it's like, I don't have time to explain to you why in this circumstance, you know. Same thing, you know, taboos. You may not have time to really discuss the nuances of how the bear is going to dissect you in a few seconds. It's better for you to just be afraid of it in a survival scenario. And I think we pulled those things back out when it came to dealing with other people, especially. You know, for instance, certain taboo subjects are taboo because people will beat you up if you talk about them because they're sensitive. You know, yo mama and all that, like, or whatever. But it's generally considered taboo to talk ill of someone else's children to their face, or even insult their children to their face, or at all, actually. And I think that might be a taboo behavior because I don't really know many parents that could withhold violence if you went after their kids. Like, that's too low. Most people would be like, oh, come on, man, that's too low. You know, too soon, too low, you know, don't go there. And so most of the time, the sensitivity around discussing certain things comes from someone having a really bad experience and then sharing that experience. And over time, it gets warped and warped until finally it's like, just don't do it, man. Just don't do it. And that gets passed down throughout the generations. And every so often, someone tries because humans are so curious. And either the taboo gets reinforced again on a cycle because that person gets punished so hard for it, or you see the taboo begin to break. And that's interesting. Because people are curious. I don't think taboos are something that will be able to be sustained forever. They are, in a way, constantly being tested. You know, someone will, you know, get enough courage to stand against it or do it for the lulls. You know, there's a really good argument to make for the lulls there. The lulls are just testing society's boundaries for progress. Progress for the lulls. Or the lulls for progress. Be a good book title. Don't steal it. Copyright TM, whatever. Well, there's a lot to be, there's a lot to be figured out about taboos, but not enough. I think we've beaten it to death talking about it. So, you have anything else you want to say about it?
Nope. I enjoyed that. That was an interesting discussion.
It was a very interesting discussion. I hope anyone else hearing it thought it was interesting, and I don't know. I'm going to go do research on this now because I'm genuinely curious about it. So.
With that said, philosophers.
Philosophers.